KDOW. Well, it sure is. It's 8:07. Still got some light snow showing up on radar. Windy out there, 32 degrees. Welcome to the Thursday edition of the morning show here. Always a busy, busy hour here and talking history this morning with our favorite historian, Jana Gageland. Jana, good morning.
Good morning to you.
Good to see you in here.
Good to be here.
We've got a lot of ground to cover and a whole lot of river to cover here this morning. We've got an interesting topic.
I hope so.
Yeah.
I haven't really given it much thought before this time, but you know, when you think of the Red River of the North, what do you think of?
Catfish.
Exactly. Or, fish houses, fighting floods.
Yeah.
You know, you don't think of it as how it was in the 1800s where it was used for commercial purposes.
It was a busy, busy place.
Yeah. It wasn't recreation. It was commercial. They had different types of boats, you know, steamboats and flat bottom boats and all those things carrying passengers and supplies to Fort Abercrombie because it was way faster than the ox cart.
Sure.
Or a wagon train or a stagecoach. And so we have a couple of books that I was introduced to was A Winding Journey to History, and that's by Naomi Lacon from Breckenridge. Great, great read. Not a real long read, but good. And then this one from Russ Castell, Wood on the Red. So the difference is, and it was really difficult to absorb all this information because for me it was pretty new. You can't be thinking of it as the border between two states.
It
really had very select purposes, and it was necessary. So anyway, if you read the Russ Castell one, it is, he starts out talking about ox carts, and so does Naomi. And then he goes into steamboats. But his stuff is so detailed. I mean, you can feel the engineering kind of language coming from what he writes. And he lists all of these steamboats by name and how they got their name and that it changed from this name to that name to that name. I mean, he's really following the history of the boats themselves. And then he goes back to talking about how did we get them here. You know, it's fascinating to me that you have a boat that's in pieces and you bring it and you put it together.
Put it together, yeah. Assemble once you get here.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, it's not Lego logs or, Lego logs or Lincoln logs. It's not any of those. I mean, it's like a real thing, So anyway, he goes into great detail about that, and he's got some stories about how the crews would stay with the ship. And he doesn't start just here, He starts back in the Minneapolis-St. Paul area and how the steamboats there operated and how they could try to get here, but they couldn't, because our river is not as low or as high. It's quite low most of the time. He talks about the ones that come from the south, from the Lake Traverse area. And then they meet here, and then we try to send them down the river, but it's pretty shallow at
sure.
the head,
Sure.
And so he goes on to talk about the bends in the river and how long these boats were and how they had to back up and maneuver the curves. So it's pretty interesting.
Well, and I'm thinking, too, looking at that book for Russ, this had to be a lifetime of digging and just finding information.
Well, it was from 1995. But, this part of history doesn't change.
Yeah.
It's there. And so, that's Russ, if anyone knew Russ. That was just the kind of guy that he was.
Mm-hmm.
So I finally got a copy of it. And so we're going to, with permission of the family, we're going to make some more copies. So
great.
Hopefully people will be able to check one out at the libraries, and then they'll also be able to purchase one at probably the Wilkin County Museum.
Well, just when you're talking about it, and it's a credit to your storytelling, too, because I've heard people tell me that, when Janet speaks, you get these, you paints these mental pictures of what our area, what our towns, and what our rivers used to look like back then, too. Yeah. But if you pick up this book and you look at some of the photos in there, it's amazing. It is fascinating stuff.
Yeah, of course, the photos are black and white and grayish, but, it does really give you a story of the steamboats and Yeah, it's incredible. And then you talk about Naoma, you know.
Well, and she could get after history, too. I know she loved it.
Oh, yes, and she was a storyteller. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was what she did best. I remember seeing her at the zoo one time. I don't know, maybe Tom was there, but we did an interview with her. So I videotaped her as she was doing a story about the zoo and the animals and the area. It's like, you know, she really gets into character.
Oh, she devoured. I made a phone call to her just to inquire about something over at the old railroad depot over
yes.
in Breckenridge.
Mm-hmm.
And she went on for 20 minutes. She said, Bill, there was this, there was this, there was this.
Right.
And just an incredible historian.
And, you know, and I learned from her information that there was a place by the roundhouse along the Boyde Sioux that where they built boats.
Really?
Yes. And most of the time they were flat bottom boats, which, of course, was used to carry cargo. You know, and so the thing that surprised me is that, okay, you start with your flat bottom boat and it goes from A to B. At B, it's disassembled and the lumber was used for building homes. You know, I'm like, wow, there was recycling, you know.
Even back then.
Yes.
Even back then.
Yes. I mean, you know, I didn't know all that before.
Well, and I'm sure this flat bottom boats could navigate the Red a little bit easier than the steamboats
sure.
with the wheels and
right.
the paddles.
Right. They yeah. they had a much easier time. But they were quite long because then they would, you know, hook two or three together kind of thing. But, you know, they moved a lot of wheat, a lot of grain from this end up to, you know, to like the Fargo-Moorhead area. Macaulayville was a big spot for boat building. And then they would, you know, go up all the way to Winnipeg. And along the way, Grandin, North Dakota. I mean, that's really a town that started with wheat and, you know, granaries and stuff like that. And like, but they didn't disassemble those. the
sure.
steamboats, they kept those going.
Sure.
So Naoma is... you know, she approaches it from the point that, you know, what we think of as being recreational, it's not, it was commercial back in those days, you
mm-hmm.
know. And yes, there were a few pleasure boats that went along and people could get a ride. But, you know, when it takes 8 days to go from Breckenridge to, you know, Macaulayville or from Moorhead, yeah, that's kind of a long ride.
Yeah.
You know, but yeah, she again, paints really good pictures. But most of what she has is written towards the Red River itself.
Mm-hmm.
And then I thought, you know, the seal for the city of Wahpeton, if you look at the seal, there are many, many things on there. In the background is a steamboat.
Of course.
And I never paid any attention to that before. I'm like, oh, wow, that is really there. Mm-hmm. You know, because you look at what's in the forefront, which is, you know, the teepee and the wheat and the ox cart. And,
sure.
And you don't see that little steam, big steamboat in the background. So it was.
But what a great part of our legacy and,
oh, absolutely.
And part of our history.
Yeah. Yeah. Again, it's one of those time travel things that you just. Well, I don't want to stay there, but I'd like to look at it.
You know, I imagine because there's a photo in either Russ's or Naomi's of the old bridge
yep.
Between Wahpeton and Breckenridge.
Right.
And I can see it in my head
mm-hmm.
standing on that bridge and just looking south on the Boyde Sioux, looking north on the Red
yes.
and just seeing all these boats coming and going.
I know.
And doing business.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah, well, you know, Morgan T. Rich had a ferry system that went from the Breckenridge Riverbank to the Wahpeton Riverbank, where they moved cattle and people. But, you know, that was just a pulley system,
mm-hmm.
you know, that
sure.
you could go straight across. But these, now they went down the river. And, of course, as we get into the Moorhead, Fargo, Grand Forks area, everything gets a little deeper, a little wider,
yeah.
and easier to navigate
mm-hmm.
Because... it was just more water.
Did any of these, did you read in there, Janet, did any of these make it up to Winnipeg?
Oh, yes, all
okay.
the time.
Okay.
All the time. In fact, sometimes they would get there and somebody would purchase the boat or the steamship,
mm-hmm.
steamboat. Yeah. And then it would, you know, they also talk about dry docking. You know, well, the winter, what are you going to do? You know, you don't have that luxury of being able to continue.
Sure.
Because it freezes over. So there was one story in Russ's where... one got actually stuck in the ice, and so they actually took it apart, you know, and moved it to where they needed it to be, and waited till spring and put it back together.
Disassemble, put it back together. Disassemble, put it back
yeah,
together.
Yeah, I it's crazy, and I don't know very much about engines, but
mm-hmm.
you know, Russ does an excellent job of, you know, talking about horsepower and how you convert, and then you know, like these people would have like. cords and wood piled up along the riverbank. Mm-hmm. So you could buy wood along the way so that you wouldn't have to carry so much to keep that steam engine.
Smart.
Yeah.
That is a really, really ingenious.
Oh, yeah. I mean, entrepreneur.
Commerce on the Red.
Yes.
And all the business that used to go on the Red River.
Oh, tons.
Hard to think of when you look at it today.
Yeah, because we see it from the recreational standpoint.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Good stuff.
Wouldn't it be cool to see a steamboat coming down the river?
It would. Like I said, you'd look in both directions to the south on the Bois de Sault and just seeing that come around the bend there and just go, wow.
Yep. Well, if you go to Bismarck, Mandan, you can see something.
You can see
like
there. There are a couple of steamboats
there. Or
in
the St. Paul area, but around here, no.
Nope.
We just got to get our canoes.
Fascinating stuff. Janet, anything else you want to add before we wrap it for the day today?
No, it's just good to be here.
And good to have you in.
It was a... for me, it was a good topic because I knew very little.
Yeah.
And so I would recommend these two reads for people.
And again, hopefully these books will be available.
Yeah, most likely at the Wilken County Museum.
Fantastic. Yeah. Janet Gageland, always great to have you in. Be well. Will you be back next week?
I'm still working on a topic that might have interest to me. So
all right.
And to others. So
sounds good. Well, drop me a line. Let me know if you'll be stopping in.
I certainly will.
We'll talk with you then, okay?
Okay, yep.
It's 8:17 here at the Voice of the Valley, AM 1450 KBMW. Good morning.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, CEO of MyPillow. Retailers, shopping channels, and now even banks have tried to cancel myself and MyPillow. During these times, your support has meant everything to us. So my employees and I want to personally thank each and every one of you by passing the savings directly on to you. We're selling the best products ever for the best prices ever. For example, we have my towels with proprietary technology, which makes them soft and absorbent. Towels that work, what a concept. They're made with USA cotton and come in a variety of awesome colors. My six-piece towel set is regularly $109.99, now just $39.99 with your promo code.
Just go to MyPillow.com now and click on the radio listener square and use promo code EggCentral or call 800-658-3645 to receive this amazing offer. When you do, Mike will also give you a free gift with any purchase.
Cargill Wahpeton is now hiring for operations.